a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Thank you. Senator Johnston.
All I can say is Clay Roberts epitomizes marrying up.
Love it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? With that, I would ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Adelstein?
I am enthusiastic. Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Brave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Having received a unanimous vote of the members present, we hereby affirm and consent to pass it to the floor for further vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
We're going to move on. We're going to keep everything in order today. Moving down through the line, I will advert, tell everyone in the committee room today that House Bill 1059 will be deferred. So if you're here to testify in regard to House Bill 1059, it's going to be deferred. Secretary of State has asked us to do that because they don't have their data ready in response. Therefore, House Bill 1033, a bill to clarify certain requirements relating to insurance examinations. Proponent testimony at this time.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Merle Schreiber with the Division of Insurance.
Morning, Merle.
1033 is brought forward to you as a form and style correction in our financial or our examination statutes. In 2001, as part of a larger bill, there was a form and style inadvertent error when it referred to director instead of his when it came to examinations. And the problem with that is that allowed me only to review information or records that were in my possession. Well, they're not in my possession. They're in the company's possession, and those are the records that we want to look at. So this is corrects that form and style error, and we urge your passage. Thank you.
Thank you, Myrtle. Any further proponents of Senate Bill, or excuse me, House Bill 1033? Seeing none, are there any opponents for House Bill 1033? Seeing none, I will open it for committee questions and or action and discussion. Senator Rave.
If there's no questions, I would move due pass.
A motion for due pass by Senator Rave, seconded by Senator Lederman. And will Secretary please call the roll?
Adelstein?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Having received a unanimous vote, is declared due pass recommendation to the Senate floor. Any further motions? Senator Johnson.
Move consent.
Motion by Senator Johnson, second by Senator Rave for consent. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? And the ayes have it, so we'll move that forward on a consent calendar. House Bill 1034, an act to revise the circumstances under which alterations may be made to certain insurance applications. Good morning, Mr. Moses.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Randy Moses, Division of Insurance, Department of Labor and Regulation. House Bill 1034 is brought to correct a problem we identified out in the marketplace. We've had this statute on the books for a number of years that says insurance applications for life and health insurance can't be altered without the applicant's permission except for administrative purposes. And what we found is we had some insurance companies that took rather liberal views of what constituted administrative purposes and actually changed the amounts and types of coverage that were applied for. And obviously that was not what the original intent was. We just wanted that for ministerial kinds of functions, date stamping, putting somebody's name on it for deciding them for, you know, for handling, that kind of thing. So this bill, I believe, closes that loophole and defines what administrative purposes are and clearly indicates that you can't change what they're applying for as far as the amount of coverage or type of coverage. And that's really what we're trying to accomplish with this bill. So with that, I would urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moses. Any further proponents of House Bill 1034? Seeing none, any opponents for House Bill 1034? Seeing none, we'll open it for questions from the committee. Senator Johnson.
Quick question, Mr. Moses. Is this a do-over? Didn't we discuss this during the last legislative session as well, in 11?
Senator, go ahead, Mr. Moses.
Senator, no, we did not. This brand new one.
Sounds familiar to something we did last legislative session.
Seems like we did something with applications, but it wasn't this.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Moses, I have a question for you. So just so that not only the committee here, but those people listening on the Internet, these things still can be changed administratively as long as the applicant in writing consents to and enumerates what that change is. Is that correct?
That's certainly, yeah, any change can be made if the applicant consents to it. That's correct, Senator. Yes.
Thank you very much. Any further questions from the committee? I'll open the committee to action. Senator Rave?
I move do pass.
Second.
Motion do pass, Senator Rave, second by Senator Johnson. Any speaking to the motion? Any other discussion? With that, the secretary, please call a roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Having received a unanimous vote, it will move to the floor. Do pass.
Mr. Chair.
Any further motions? Yes, Senator Johnson.
Consent.
Motion for consent by Senator Johnson, second by Senator Rave. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Having received no nays, this will move forward on consent. House Bill 1035, an act to allow the disclosure of the status of certain insurance investigations and examinations. Proponent testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Randy Moses, Division of Insurance, Department of Labor and Regulation. 1035 comes to you due to a long, persistent problem that we've had. The confidentiality laws that have been in place for quite a while preclude the Division of Insurance and other agencies from disclosing the existence of an investigation or examination. And we certainly understand that and appreciate that. But it becomes frustrating for certain individuals when they're the one that filed the complaint or the report to our office, and we can't tell them what's happening. Of course, then they suspect, well, they're not really looking at this. They're not doing anything. And so they complain to their senator, their representative, or the governor's office, and we still can't tell them much of anything. And it really puts them in a really frustrated situation because they don't know if the situation that they complained about is ever being acted upon in any way. So what this bill does is carve out a narrow exception to say that we can disclose the existence, the status, and the outcome of an investigation or examination, but only to that person that filed the complaint or the report. Now, there were a few concerns that this might open the can of worms, so to speak, we worked with industry on this and did have an amendment that was put on the House side, and also the Attorney General had a concern as well. So the bill, as it currently sits in the engrossed version, exempts out fraud investigations. So the insurance fraud investigations, which are criminal investigations, are exempt. So there's no disclosure there. There's also concern about confidential documents. So we also put in there that if an insurance company sends us a response to a complaint, for example, on an investigation, they can stamp a confidential if they're concerned about the confidentiality of that information. Then we obligated to honor that stamp. And then finally, coincidentally, we were looking at a matter dealing with premium tax and discovered when we got changed from being part of Department of Revenue to being a part of the new Department of Labor and Regulation that the confidentiality of premium tax records for companies was tied to us being part of Department of Revenue. And so that left the premium tax records confidentiality up in the air for insurance companies, and we wanted to maintain that status quo and keep those records confidential as they always have been. So we put that last amendment on the bill to mirror what we had in place for premium tax confidentiality when we were part of the Department of Labor. So it keeps the status quo on that part of the confidentiality as well. So that's what the bill does, and appreciate your yes vote and stand by for questions. Thank you.
Mr. Moses, what you just referred to then is this Section 6, and who brought that? That was Was that an amendment? Yeah, it was amended.
That we had one large amendment on the House side, and that was part of the amendment, Senator. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Any further proponents of House Bill 1035? Any opponents for House Bill 1035? Seeing none, I would open up to questions and discussion by the committee. Senator Rafe.
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Moses.
Mr. Moses, go
ahead. Randy, what was the history of not allowing at least the individual to have access to the information they filed in a complaint?
Senator, to the best of my knowledge, it's one of those things that wasn't really considered when they put the confidentiality in. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it was intentional. I think it was just they wanted to, you know, maintain the confidentiality examinations, investigations, and really didn't get into that area.
Okay. Thank you.
With no further questions, open for action.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rave.
I move to pass.
Move to pass by Senator Rave, seconded by Senator Johnson. Any speaking to the motion?
Briefly, only that I think this is a common sense change. It certainly makes sense that at least the individual who's filing a complaint should have access to information that is ongoing in the investigation. It sounds like there's a couple of safeguards in there for a couple of specific situations, so I'd encourage the committee to support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a comment from the chair. This is not necessarily transparency, but it moves in that direction and certainly keeps the public more informed of when they act to have something looked into. At least they get some feedback to know that it's being done. I think there was an example on the Senate floor yesterday where someone had made a complaint and was still wondering. It was a senator who had made a complaint to one of our agencies. And because of these confidentiality things, even that senator did not know if anything was being done. So I think this is a good bill. And with that, Secretary, please call a roll.
Edelstein?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Having received a unanimous vote of the members present, this will move to the floor, a due pass. Any further action? Senator Johnston.
I move consent.
Second.
Motion by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Rave for consent. Any speaking to the motion?
No.
I'll just comment that having testimony here today from proponent indicated that the questions regarding this bill were well settled in the House Commerce Committee and by various other agencies, and they are not present here today. I think this is appropriate to move to consent. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passed. Consent on House Bill 1035. We'll move on to House Bill 1071, an act to increase the benefits that the Insurance Guarantee Association may become obligated to cover for annuities. Senator Lederman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It seems like things move really, really quickly when we have when we're short a couple people, so hopefully this maintains next couple weeks. I'll be honest, I'm not, I am a licensed insurance agent in the state of South Dakota, but this part of insurance is a little confusing. What isn't confusing is the small change that is being asked here today to move the coverage for an annuity from $100,000 to $250,000. And with that, I will leave it to the prime sponsor in the House, Representative Willardson, to explain the rest of the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Lederman. Further proponents. Good morning, Senator, Representative Willardson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Mark Willardson from District 11 in Sioux Falls. And in full disclosure, I'm also an insurance agent licensed in the state of South Dakota, and I do sell annuities. House Bill 1071 is a consumer protection update. In true to form, we're changing two words, and the bill's 8 pages long. But I think it's good to note that on the other 8 pages, it also lists the guarantee amounts that we have for other lines of insurance. And in the other lines of insurance, we've changed and updated those guarantee amounts, with the exception of annuities. We have not. Annuities, the guarantee amount was set at $100,000 in the inception of the Guarantee Association in 1989 and has not been updated since. So this was pointed out to me this fall, and we took a look at it and decided it was probably time to make an update. I contacted the Division of Insurance and several other organizations, NAFA and the American Council on Life Insurance. We put together the bill that we have before you today, and we're all in concert and harmony that we should make this change. Now, when I said it's a consumer protection update, that's really, really true. What the Guarantee Association does is that if a company that's licensed to do business in South Dakota should go bankrupt or become insolvent, then the Guarantee Association steps in to make sure that our citizens that have contracts with that particular company are covered. They don't, obviously, like the FDIC does with banks, they don't obviously, you know, cover for the total amount. There are certain, you know, limits that they have in their, that they do that, and that's what this bill addresses. So we're simply asking to change the Guarantee Association amount from $100,000 to $250,000. I think there's going to be an amendment. I will consider this a friendly amendment. There's been some news and some change in that we're going to need to do an emergency clause, but I'll let some of the other proponents speak to that. So, Mr. Chair, I'll stand by for questions and let the other proponents speak.
Thank you, Representative Willardson. Further proponents of House Bill 1071.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members, Merle Shiver, Division of Insurance. And as the Representative Wilson did say, he did work closely with our office in making this change. And as he indicated too, I won't repeat all of it, but it has not been amended this amount since its inception in 1989, which is important. And it also does bring into compliance or uniformity with the NAIC model. So we support this change too. Thank you.
And Merle, before you sit down, let me just ask a quick question. Since we've had so many disclosures of prime sponsors, Senate and House, being insurance agents, could you give us an idea of how many insurance agents there are in South Dakota?
In South Dakota? Yes, Senator. Excuse me, there are a little over 8,000 resident licensed insurance agents and approximately, I think it's 39,000 non-resident insurance agents licensed in South Dakota.
Thank you very much. Any further proponents of House Bill 1071? Good morning, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Gregerson. I'm a registered lobbyist for the American Council of Life Insurance. We were not directly involved in this bill at the beginning. Mr. Representative Willison did contact us and asked our opinion, and the American Council, which most of the major life companies are members of the American Council, ran the bill by us, and we thought it was a good idea because the coverage under annuities was way out of whack with other types of coverage. However, after the bill was introduced and after it was passed in the House, we were contacted by Chuck Gullickson, who's an attorney in Sioux Falls, and he's the attorney for the Guarantee Fund. And he suggested that we propose an amendment, which we agreed with, to make this retroactive, put on an emergency clause. And the reason for that is there's a company in New York, Executive Life Insurance Company of New York, that's going through insolvency. And they have written some policies in South Dakota. So there are going to be some insureds in South Dakota that, because of the $100,000 limit, will not be reimbursed or inadequately reimbursed. Some of them might have more than $250,000, but $250,000 is better than $100,000. So to protect these South Dakota policyholders, we thought it best to put on this emergency clause. We would have done it in the House, but we're unaware of the situation. And I have the amendment, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Would a page please come forward? And while we have a moment, while she's handing them out, we have Haley Hahn from Pierre and Madeline Schuler from Pierre as pages today. I neglected to state that early in this meeting, so I thought I'd just throw that in there. Is that House 1071RA that you're proposing?
Pardon me?
Is this your amendment?
Yes, I talked to both principal sponsors and advised them of the amendment and what we were going to do. It went ran up by the insurance division.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Adelson. Amendment 1071RA moved by Senator Adelson, seconded by Senator Rave. All those in favor state aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Amendment is hereby amended. So if any further proponents to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any opponents to the bill as amended? Seeing none at this point, I would ask Representative Willardson to come back and give further comments about the, if you would, about the amendment 1071RA.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Willardson, representative from District 11 in Sioux Falls. At the time that we wrote the bill, we did not know the information that we do now about this company from New York. And I think that it makes good sense to help protect our citizens just that much more. Now, keep in mind, they may still be holding the bag. For example, if they were to have $500,000 in an annuity, this guarantee, this change in the law is only to $250,000. They're still going to be holding the bag on $250,000. But I think it's a responsible step to go ahead and pass this bill as it's amended. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Willardson. With that, I'll close the testimony and open for discussion and or action by the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Alstead.
I have a question for Mr. Willardson, Representative Willardson.
Representative Willardson, go ahead.
Is this guarantee association only for South Dakota, or is it some kind of a national association?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
No, this is the South Dakota Guarantee Association. It is for companies that do business in South Dakota and for South Dakotans that have purchase contracts from those companies.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Senator.
What is the balance in the in that association? How much money is there?
Mr. Representative Willardson, I believe the senator is referring to the
association.
The association fund.
Yes, sir. And I do not know, sir, what the balance would be.
Go ahead. Senator.
Anyone else in the room know?
Chair recognizes Merle Schreiber.
Merle Schreiber, Division of Insurance. Senator, I'm not positive, but I know it's healthy. What we do is the insurance companies that do business in South Dakota are assessed, and they get the guarantee fund. And there has not been an insolvency in, in quite some time on the life and health. Everybody should understand there are two guarantee associations in the state of South Dakota. One's property and casualty and one's life and health. And there hasn't been any receiverships that I'm aware of in a long time on the life and health. And so it is healthy, and I can't quote if it's, you know, $1 million or whatever, but at this particular point, it is healthy. I can get the information for you, Senator. I'd be happy to.
Senator Adelson.
Chairman, I think it'd be good to get that information because given the times we live in, well, the one other question that would
go ahead, Senator Adelson.
Either one.
State your question.
My question is, you say it's been some time. Have we ever had to draw on that account? And if
you,
when
you
and
know
what?
That. Representative Willardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we have. Back in the 80s, E.F. Hutton went under. There was another company from Kansas, I think, that went down. So, yes, we have Pentry. So we have used the Guarantee Association on occasion, and it's worked the way that we intended it to.
Then one follow-up question. When you did that in the two cases, were there many? Do you have any idea how many South Dakotans ended up still losing some of their funds or what they should have received either in reimbursement?
Well,
go ahead,
Chair. Senator, I believe that in the 80s, the companies that went under, it was mostly with life insurance contracts. And so those contracts were continued by the Guarantee Association with the limits that they were on as far as the face amounts and so on. So I don't know how many, you know, people were affected by that, but I'm sure that the Guarantee Association reports are available every year, and that information would be available from them, that we could get that readily.
Senator Adelson, might I ask a follow-up question because I think I know where you're going. Representative Willardson, if in fact in the past it were like $100,000 and the policy was for $150,000, that meant that only the first $100,000 of that particular policy would have been covered in an insolvency. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, in this case with the annuities, that's correct.
Yeah, and so in a life insurance thing, which I believe I noticed when I read through this, that they had a larger limit. Let's say it's $300,000. If they had a bill, if they had a policy for $350,000, only the first $300,000 would have been covered under South Dakota codified law. Is that correct?
That would be correct. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Is that?
Yes, Mr. President. Mr. Chairman. The reason I was asking is because I'm trying to figure out whether $250,000 is really an adequate coverage, and I don't know where to look for it because if he isn't there, it wouldn't be. On the other hand, if there aren't many claims, it wouldn't be.
I think that's a good question. I think we ought to ask Representative Willardson to respond to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did do considerable due diligence when we looked at the amount. We looked at, for example, the American Council on Life Insurance. Their model for annuities is $250,000, and that was the amount that they supported. We looked at the NAIC, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. Their model was also $250,000, and so that's why we designed the bill the way that it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Willardson, Representative Willardson, that would suggest to me that they've looked at the average amount of the highs and lows of the amounts of annuities that are normally issued. Is that a fair statement? I mean, it's probably not common for someone to put all their investment in a $500,000 annuity. They might buy $100,000 or $200,000 or...
Mr. Chair, I don't think that the average amount of the annuity would probably come into play with that so much as the factors that involve the average of insolvencies. You know, how often does it happen? You know, how many types of bankruptcies are we going to need to cover from the guarantee fund? So I think they look more at the statistics, from that part than they would, for the particular amount of the annuity. On the other hand, we can also look to the FDIC. If you go to the bank and want to make a deposit in a certificate of deposit at the bank, those funds are also guaranteed at $250,000. So it's kind of a benchmark amount from that part, and I think that the players to be are comfortable with it.
Thank you, Representative Willis. And I see Mr. Schreiber would like to make another comment if you'd take the stand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, Merle Shire, Division of Insurance. I have a great staff and they're listening, so they called Chuck Gullickson just a minute ago. And to answer Senator Adelstein's questions, there's $2.1 million in the fund right now.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schreiber. Any further questions and or discussion on House Bill 1071?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lederman.
I would like to add that Merle does have a great staff.
Yes. The chair notes that comment.
So I can't say so much about the leadership, but the people in the office, great people.
Any further discussion and or action on this House Bill 1071? Senator Rave.
Mr. Chair, I'll move to pass.
Do pass by Senator Rave, seconded by Senator Lederman. Any discussion to that motion?
Probably better that I don't.
Okay. having heard none, the Secretary, please call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Having received a unanimous vote of the members elect, the motion to do pass will be moved to the floor. A motion for consent by Senator Adelstein. Is there?
Mr. Chair.
And it has an emergency, so we cannot do that. So we'll move it to the floor. It will require a two-thirds vote. And with that, I'd like to have someone move the title amendment. Title Amendment 1071 RTA has been moved by Senator Rave, seconded by Senator Adelstein. All those in favor state aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Hearing none, the title is hereby amended. And we'll move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The next bill is House Bill 1073, Proponent Testimony on an Act to Prohibit Certain Indemnity Provisions in Motor Carrier Transportation Contracts. Good morning, Senator Johnson.
Senator Nygaard, good morning, and to the rest of the committee. Mark Johnston, State Senator, District 12. So goes the American economy, so goes the trucking industry. I've spent a number of years earlier in my career in the trucking industry, and in fact, my wife and I were small business owners. We owned our own trucking company. House Bill 1073 creates new language in South Dakota law. However, the language in this bill is certainly not new language in this country. To date, over 30 states have enacted similar legislation. This bill prohibits shippers from shifting liability for their negligent acts to truckers. Shippers often force truckers to provide transportation services under contracts that require the trucker to indemnify and hold harmless the shipper for their own negligent or intentional acts or omissions. Let me say that again. Shippers often force truckers to provide transportation services under contracts that require the trucker to indemnify and hold harmless the shipper for their own negligent or intentional acts or omissions. These indemnification clauses should be prohibited as a matter of public policy because they have an adverse effect on transportation safety. Shifting liability to the trucker eliminates the shipper's incentive to perform its duties in a prudent and reasonably safe manner. When the shipper is at fault but is not indemnified by the trucker, there is no reason for that shipper to change behavior to improve safety. This bill makes these indemnification clauses in motor carrier transportation contracts void and unenforceable. I would like to have Myron Rao from the South Dakota Trucking Association to come forward and further explain the importance of this piece of legislation. He's got some anecdotes to maybe better explain this. And I did appreciate your favorable vote on House Bill 1073.
Thank you, Senator Johnston. And with that, further proponent testimony on House Bill 1073.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Commerce and Energy Committee. I'm Myron Rao, president and registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Trucking Association. I want to thank Senator Johnston for bringing this bill for your consideration this morning. As he indicated, this is new language in South Dakota law, but not new language in the country. I've got a handout that pictorially shows you what has happened in the country as far as this statute is concerned. The national push for enactment of this legislation originated with the American Trucking Associations many years ago. When we say that shippers often force truckers to sign contracts that require a trucker to indemnify and hold harmless the shipper for their own negligent and intentional acts or omissions, you might respond by asking, well, then why would they sign the contract? Well, most truckers don't have a legal counsel where they could resist this. Plus, if one company doesn't sign the contract, another one will, and these guys have to stay loaded in order to make money. So bottom line is they don't have much choice. When the members of the South Dakota Trucking Association asked me to prepare to advocate for this piece of legislation, I put out a request for members to send me contracts that they currently have with shippers, and I'm very proud to say that I could not find a South Dakota contract that had this language in it. The best example I can give you and caused the sweep of this in the land is from the state of Mississippi, and I could read that to you or provide a copy if you want to actually hear what that contract sounds like or reads like. Quickly, I'd like to give you a couple of examples to demonstrate why these indemnity clauses are bad. While a trucker is sitting in line waiting to load or unload at a facility, and he remembered some issue he had under his truck. So he crawls underneath, and he's laying under the truck, and his legs are sticking out about 3.5-4 feet. And somebody from the company where he's loading drives over his legs with a forklift. We can't recover. We have to end up paying the work comp. We have to end up paying everything because we've indemnified and held harmless those people while we're on the property. And like I say, if you read the actual section in those contracts, it says to include death. Another example is we're sitting at the loading dock, truck is parked there, and we're basically waiting to be loaded, and a fire starts in another building adjacent to the building we're parked at, or even in that same building. It's a total loss. The building is, including the loss of our tractor and trailer. Again, we can't recover that loss. You might wonder why it's necessary for every state to address this issue. Well, we don't. We end up with a checkerboard across this country, and some states are going to continue to have this in their contract while others will not. In addition to the reasons given by the prime sponsor, shifting liability of the trucker is simply not fair. Under these circumstances, if the shipper causes the problem, the shipper should be liable. Conversely, if we are at fault, we should be held accountable for the act and its consequences. In closing, I'd like to quickly take the committee to Section 3 of the bill. Section 3 talks about the Uniform Intermodal Interchange and Facilities Access Agreement. I don't have the document with me, but I've got it at my room. It's about 60 pages long. You don't want to read it. But basically what it is, when we're talking about intermodal shipments, those are those containers that you see loading from ships and rails. We take a chassis. We clamp that unit on there. We are willing to take responsibility for those issues because we've taken control of that entire property. There was also a small amendment made in the House State Affairs Committee, and I believe that's on page 2, lines 9 through 11. And when I was circulating this for signature, that there was some concern about being very specific about not voiding the contract in its entirety, but only that clause. And so I think the House State Affairs Amendment actually made the bill better. And otherwise, we had no resistance. We had no opponents. I don't think there have been any identified. This has been a big issue in some states, but at this point has not been in South Dakota. And I think the reason for that is this speaks South Dakotan. We believe that those responsible for their acts need to pay, and those that aren't responsible, we shouldn't be able to shift burden to those people. On behalf of the 560 member companies that comprise the South Dakota Trucking Association, I respectfully request your favorable vote on House Bill 1073, and I will stand by for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rao. In fact, I think we'll just keep you right there, if you wouldn't mind. I'm going to go ahead and start some questions, and we'll just keep. Yeah, well, do we have any further proponents in the room? Do we have any opponents? Seeing no proponents or opponents other than the two that have testified, I start with some questions. I'd like to lead off with. On your chart, you have blue ones pursuing anti-indemnity statute, and you have yellow states, or three of them, considering. Is that just a designation between those, when this chart was made, those legislatures which were in session at this time versus ones that weren't in session? What is the difference between a yellow and a blue state?
We were yellow until before this chart was made.
Okay.
Because we hadn't considered it.
Yep.
But
very good. And then the other thing was in this, you just mentioned in your testimony, Section 3 in these intermodal transfers. I'm wondering, the status quo is that tort reparations are interfered with by virtue of these indemnity clauses where you contract away your normal rights to recover for somebody else's wrongdoing. Now, when you, and you gave great examples, it made it clear for me, and hopefully everyone, that, but now in Section 3, when you say that you're excluding Section 3 intermodal exchange, interchange, and facilities access, so you, on line 14, providing for the interchange, use possession of, and I can see the possession of and the transporting of, but at that moment, how does this impact when you pull up to the shipper's dock? At what point does liability attach? Do you get away from liability of the, let's say that their crane drops the Connex and it rolls off the truck. You get where I'm going on this? And your driver is standing by and he gets crushed by the truck. Are you suggesting here that because of Section 3, you still have to indemnify the shipper, even though in that case, under normal tort law, they would be liable?
I could bring that agreement, Mr. Chairman, and we could read it together. But my reading,
60-page agreement.
Yeah, I believe that's what it is. My understanding, and this is again boilerplate legislation. This is done in every state in the country similarly, and they were all carved out. And I believe, again, to the best of my knowledge, the contract or the Uniform Intermodal Exchange and Facilities Access Agreement covers exactly what your example is.
That was my only concern. Thank you. Any further questions of either proponents for this bill from the committee? Seeing none, any discussion and or action?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I have a question that is technical in nature and does not include the proponents, but and I hope I'm not embarrassed by the answer, but in this bill, this is, I think, the first piece of legislation I've written, and this is probably for Amanda, that I don't see the words new section, amended, repealed, underscores, overstrikes.
Go ahead. Turn on your mic.
You only put new section in if you're specifying which chapter it's being put in. This is a brand new chapter.
Yep.
Thank you.
With that, any further discussion or action? Sure. Senator Rave.
I'd move do pass.
Second.
Motion by Senator Rave, do pass, seconded by Senator Adelstein. Any comments to that motion?
Briefly only that Mr. Rao, I think, described it very succinctly. It seems to me to be a very South Dakota common sense issue and probably should have been addressed quite some time ago. So I'd ask your favorable consideration of the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments? Seeing none, Secretary, please call a roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
And received a unanimous vote of the members present. House Bill 1073 will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Johnson.
Move consent.
Motion by Senator Johnson to consent and seconded by Senator Adelstein. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Having received all ayes, this will move forward on consent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Having no further business before the committee at this time, I'd entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Motion by Senator Johnson, seconded by Senator Rave. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The meeting is adjourned.